Grab your phone, tablet, or whatever you listen on and get comfy, because here's another great episode of the Pop Zara Podcast. Enjoy it.
Little molded figures that gave us big dreams will go back in time and behind the scenes. It's the toys that made us. Toys that made us. Toys that made us here.
Hello and welcome back to the Pop Zara Podcast. That's right, it's a podcast about Pop Zaras, and today the subject is funny and toys. And who better to talk with our special guest, the president of Comedy Dynamics, as well as acclaimed producer of stand-up comedy specials, who's worked with pretty much everyone in the business. It might be easier just to say who he hasn't worked with. And that would be other than Brian Weiss. Brian, welcome to the Pop Zara Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem. And I'm not joking either, by the way. Just looking at your wiki page, everybody's there. I thought I saw my name on there, and we've never even met. So it's it's crazy. You've worked. I saw Jerry Seinfeld. I saw Weird Al Yankovic. I saw Dave Chappelle. I saw Whitney Cummings. Everybody's there. It's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, I've been very blessed.
Very blessed. But we're not here to talk about comedy. We're here to talk about toys. And specifically, a documentary series you've been making with Netflix since last year, the tail end, I think December, called The Toys That Made Us. So, question for you, real quick question. And I should have known this because the documentary has a title song that it sings, and I should have picked up on this. But we got a whole new bunch of episodes coming next Friday, I believe the 25th, May 25th.
Correct.
So, this is the second part of the first season, correct?
It's a little confusing, and everybody should be forgiven if they're confused, and I take responsibility for the confusion. Though things definitely did change, but the way it is being organized on Netflix, season one is 4 episodes, season 2 is 4 episodes, and we are currently in the midst of producing season 3, which will be another 4 episodes.
We had fights before the podcast. It almost came to fisticuffs about what to do. So
I'll pay for the ambulance.
You make me so happy because I'm not crazy. Because I listened to that theme song.
Yes.
Over and over. It's like an 8-part documentary series. And I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't right. So.
And what we're going to do, and this is actually the first time I've said this publicly, so you're getting a little scoop on this podcast. What we're going to do, inspired by how Star Trek The Next Generation dealt with the whole 5-year mission problem and changed it to its continuing mission. When season 3 premieres, it'll be the same opening, but the lyrics will be changed to, instead of an 8-part documentary series, to something like a continuing documentary series inspired by Next Gen.
I was going to say no one cares, but we're talking about genre here that people will scrutinize every little thing we say, and they'll hold it to you, and they'll follow you to your grave. So. But thank you for mentioning Star Trek Next Generation, because I really wouldn't recommend you take any inspiration from Star Trek Discovery, which is a mess. So your show makes a lot more sense than their show. So they haven't figured it out. So, going for it.
I will say this. The first 2 seasons of Next Gen are almost unwatchable. And I would argue, as problematic as the first season of Discovery was, it was better than the first season of Next Gen, with the exception of Encounter at Farpoint.
Hey, so quick question. So going back, so we got the second part of, or whatever you want to call it, The Toys That Made Us coming out. So
Season two.
So thank you. We will call it season 2. So your people were kind enough to send me 2 episodes. We could talk a little bit about that. And I do want to go back to just touch on some of the episodes from the first season, because they made me laugh. Real quick, so let's talk about a little bit about the show. So with your history with all these stand-up comedians, why a documentary on Netflix about toys?
It's a great question. So basically, there were 2 things coming together, one creative and one business. So on the creative side, I am a huge toy collector since I was a little kid playing with the toys. Those toys that I played with as a little kid became the oldest part of what is now, I guess, a collection. Combined with, I've always been a huge history buff. My grandfather, Bruno, when I was a little kid, told me a lot of stories about growing up in Austria and World War II. So I've always been a huge history buff. And at some point, a long time ago, I realized you could go into a bookstore and find, 25 books about the War of 1812. Mm. And it was very hard to find anything like, where did Optimus Prime come from? Why is Cobra Commander Cobra Commander. Like, I mean, no disrespect to the War of 1812, but it was just very strange to me that I think it's undeniable Transformers and G.I. Joe, for example, let alone Star Wars toys, are much more relevant in 2017 and 18 and beyond than the War of 1812. So why was it so hard to find out where all these things came from and what their origin was? So that was the creative inspiration behind the show. And then the business side of it was, because of stand-up comedy, you know, I had been in business with Netflix for, you know, years, 6, 7, 8 years. And I had been trying to sell the toys that made us probably for 6 years, maybe 7, by the time I pitched it to Netflix the first time. So luckily, a lot of the people I knew at Netflix from the stand-up comedy side had been promoted over the years and were now in a position, as Netflix was getting into unscripted programming, where I was like, hey, you got to buy this show for me. And a lot of these executives had been to my house and seen my collection. And from a technical standpoint, they trusted me because I'd been making stand-up comedy for them for years. And on the toys side, they trusted me because they had seen my collection and knew I loved toys. So at a certain point, they took me, for just so you know, for a long time, almost a year, I'd get on the phone with somebody from Netflix and they'd be like, you're not calling about that toy thing, are you? But eventually, I wore them down and they told me the kind of show they'd be interested in. I made a 6-minute little tape, a little teaser on our own. Showed it to them. They loved it. And that's what got the first 2 seasons greenlit.
You know, I got to say, with your history with all these stand-up comics, when I first started watching it last year, by the way, made a very Merry Christmas in my house. I was afraid that it would be something more along the lines of those terrible I Love the 80s clips where they'd get a comedian with the talking heads who clearly had no idea what they were talking about. They'd give him, you know, a Teddy Ruxpin right before the thing and say, play with this and make fun of it. Oh, and your show is not that at all. I just want to be clear. For those of you who haven't seen it, and I think everybody listening to this has Netflix, so go watch it, The Toys That Made Us. It's very respectful and it's very reverential, and yet it's still very funny. So how did you come up with this concoction that works?
Yeah, man, great. You really hit the nail on the head. So, I mean, I really appreciate the way you see it and phrased it, because that was exactly what we were trying to do. And I'll tell you exactly where what you referred to as reverence came from. When I was a little kid, I went with my parents to the Gettysburg battlefield. And there is a tree there. There's probably more than one, but I remember this tree the tour guide showed us that had bullets stuck in it, cannonballs stuck in it. And I just remember, I never forgot about it, but what I remember thinking about it was, this is just a tree, and this is just a metal ball in a tree. But it shows you that 120 years ago or whatever, some angry guy shot a bullet at another angry guy, and this was all real. And right now, it's a beautiful meadow, but this metal ball in a tree, it reminds you of what actually we're all here to talk about. And that we tried to put that in every episode. The greatest example of that in the episode, in the first 2 episodes, is when we go back to Kenner headquarters and we see, you know, Corky and Jim walking around the floor where the Millennium Falcon and the TIE fighters and everything had been designed. And now it's an empty floor with chairs covered in plastic. So that for me was the toys version of that tree at Gettysburg with the bullet hole in it. And we tried to, you know, we went to Japan for the Transformers episode. We went to, have you seen the Transformers episode?
You know what? I saw the list of the toys that you guys were going to talk about, and I remember talking to your PR people, and they said they could only give me some, and they doled them out one at a time. And the first one was Star Trek. I said, okay, I'm good with this. And they said, congratulations, we put a second one in your queue. I said, please be Transformers. It was Hello Kitty. And so I got to tell you, I am very excited, more than excited about the Transformers one, because I was going to ask you a question, but I'm going to ask you right now. Did you cry when Optimus Prime died in the movie in 1986?
I got to tell you, man, I didn't cry because I was not even 99.9, I was 100% sure he was going to come back to life. So when the movie ended and the credits started and everybody was still dead, not to mention Optimus Prime, I saw it in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and our house was about a 45-minute drive from Pittsfield. I mean, shell shock. Absolutely. I would say the only thing similar of my life of watching content was when, spoiler alert, when Hank was killed in Breaking Bad. I would say those were the two most shell shock moments I've had of watching
now, TV or movies. Just so we're clear, that's the episode I think was titled "Oh Shit."
True?
So I could say that because we're PG-13 here. By the way, Transformers the movie rated G had the S word, had the D word, had all. Everybody died because, you know, I hope you talk about this in the show because one of the fans of this podcast is actually Stan Bush. We've had him on before, and he's really, and he gets it too. He gets it why, you know, one particular song and one particular moment can lead to an entire career for better or for worse. But in that movie, again, I haven't seen the episode yet, but do you address the idea that a toy line at the time thinks it can sort of rejuvenate itself by killing all the characters you like and essentially forcing fans to have to buy new figures that they think they are going to like? You know, we'll get rid of Bumblebee. We'll get rid of Optimus Prime. Here's Rodimus Prime. He's just as good as Optimus. No, he's not. You know, let's reboot it again. And I bring that up because have you seen Avengers Infinity War?
I have.
Okay, no spoilers for a movie that's made $1 billion. But, you know, the end. Yeah, so the ending, let's just say not everyone survives. But I think I feel like you do now. I think they're going to come back. I don't think they're going to kill the cash cow.
I have a feeling everybody's coming back with one exception who...
Yeah, no spoilers for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no pains in the neck.
Pretty sure we're going to see Spider-Man again, if I had to guess.
But, you know, I want to go back to your reverence thing real quick about Gettysburg. I was at the Smithsonian Museum a couple months ago, and I remember seeing for the first time in my life that famous picture of George Washington that's torn. And a lot of people, you know, history buffs know it. That was saved by, I think it was Abigail Adams, or one of the first ladies who grabbed that and saved it when the British burned down the White House. You know, when you talk about going to Gettysburg, you know, as Americans, we're very lucky not to have a lot of war-torn streets around us. I can look outside and see a 7-Eleven, but I don't see like some ancient bridge from England, or when Rome took over my country. I can remember being traumatized when Optimus Prime died. And for better or for worse, that's what the 80s gave me. They saddled me with cartoon nostalgia. And like a lot of people my age, I think we're in the same age bracket. By the way, I think we're in the same region bracket. You mentioned Massachusetts. I'm a New Hampshireite, so we're pretty close. So, you know, live free or die. It sounds authentic, but it's more like a threat. But moving forward, you know, that was my childhood, for better or for worse. My childhood wasn't running through the streets, you know, with famine and starvation. It was capitalism, you know. And so I want to go back to some of the episodes real quick. So thank you for letting me know that Transformers is going to be one to watch. So you start off with Star Wars. Star Wars is back. So then you go to Barbie. And then we have He-Man, and then you conclude the first season with G.I. Joe. So was there a reason why you chose these particular episodes to lead off and leading into the second season to start off with?
Yes, there was definitely a reason. The Star Wars, for me, is the most personal. Like, my collection at home, you know, is over probably 600 individual pieces. I would say over 200 of those are Star Wars. So it was the most personal to me. And it was also the first episode that we made, like the first episode that we did a first cut of, the first episode that we locked, the first episode that we delivered to Netflix. So to me, it would just be weird to start the whole series off with anything but Star Wars. So that's why Star Wars was first. Barbie was second because Barbie is an incredibly influential and powerful figure all by herself, but at the same time, Barbie was also about the history of Mattel. Mm-hmm. So I wanted people to understand the history of Mattel before they watched He-Man. So that I hear all the time, I watched all three episodes. And I'm like, you know something? If you like the He-Man episode, they're like, that was my favorite. I go, watch the Barbie episode because A, it's a great story.
Yes.
But B, it's all about Mattel as much as Barbie, and you will enjoy He-Man more if you know more about Mattel. And as you saw with Star Trek, Star Trek is not just about Star Trek. It's also largely about Mego,
yes.
Which, in my opinion, for the show that we're making, I'm not going to do a whole episode about Mego. But I think you can do an episode about Star Trek that a fifth of it is about Mego. So we'll see. We'll see what people say a week from now.
I was going to say, when I watched it, the first thing I said was, I want a Planet of the Apes episode. I'm probably not going to get it, but I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind it. So what did they call it? Model swapping, when they would just sort of reuse a model from one line and they would...
Label slapping.
Label slapping. That sounds a lot dirtier than it is. But but going back to Barbie for a second, I want to encourage people, because a lot of people, they think of toys as more of a boys thing and they think of Barbie as a doll. But I got to tell you, I enjoyed the Barbie episode quite a bit. I now know that Barbie was inspired by a European sexy doll. And I got to tell you, that's a piece of trivia that I'm going to use in my life as currency.
Of the 12 episodes, from my point of view, that have been made or are currently being made, my number one favorite thing that I learned was how Marvel kind of accidentally was like, do you think G.I. Joe should have bad guys? And that's what led to Cobra. That was my favorite thing. But my second favorite thing, and very almost tied with first place, was the whole thing about how Barbie, for almost 20 years, was looking sideways because women were not supposed to look directly at men or whatever. And then finally in the 80s, as the women's empowerment began, Barbie finally looked straight ahead. That, to me, is one of the most interesting things that I learned from this entire experience of producing the series. And I actually have both of those Barbies now in my collection. The last one to look sideways and the first one to look straight ahead.
See, that sort of trivia is really interesting, but it also shows you how, you hear this argument a lot about how toys specifically are sort of gendered towards boys and girls. And I don't know if you remember the brouhaha a couple years back when Target said they were no longer going to, color code their toy aisles blue for boys and pink for girls. Although it turned out to be kind of bupkis because, I think the retailers compensated by making all the girls' toys boxes pink. So they're still pink and they're still blue, but it is what it is. But I have a question for you. So in my view, my favorite episode so far, if I could have a favorite, would, no surprise, would probably be the He-Man episode. And I learned quite a bit. It's a lot of fun. And the direction is really fun, where you don't make some of the creators antagonistic, but you kind of imply that there's a little bit of a miscommunication between them. And it's a lot of fun. And I learned that Skeletor was inspired by a real human cadaver, which, thank you, Wikipedia, I now know a lot about that. But my question has to do with the second part of the episode, going back to the gender thing, because I just need you to settle something for me. So from people that I've talked to that have seen the episode and people who are He-Man aficionados, because they exist, so the idea is that the He-Man, one of the reasons for the He-Man downfall, because this was a toy line that was bigger than everything. It was bigger than Barbie at one point, correct? It was bigger than Transformers. It was bigger than Star Wars. And I don't think it was that horrible Dolph Lundgren movie that brought it down. But there seems to be a train of thought that one of the reasons that He-Man lost interest with its demographic was to do with She-Ra. Now, I never knew this, but there is a theory that She-Ra represented sort of an encroachment of girls into the He-Man universe. And therefore, when girls started playing with He-Man and She-Ra toys, boys lost interest, and therefore the toy line plummeted. What do you think about that? Is there any truth to that?
There's definitely some truth to it. And I think that there's a lot of reasons He-Man eventually not only failed, but failed spectacularly. Most toys eventually fail, but they fall 5% a year for 10 years. Like, He-Man fell 97% over the course of 12 months. So I think that the She-Ra thing played a part of it. And pretty much everybody involved will agree She-Ra played a part in it. But the disagreement is some people think it was 90% of the problem. Some people say it was 2% of the problem. But I will tell you this. I got to know a lot of people over the course of making the show, a lot of the executives. You know, one of the things that, because of my business experience, almost 20 years of being in show business, that I learned, I would say in combination with the Gettysburg tree, was one of the things I learned over my career is lawyers, especially lawyers and executives, these people have a front row seat to history. And you'll notice a lot of the episodes, we interview the lawyers and a lot of like background executives, like in marketing and stuff, because they don't normally get, you know, it's usually the CEOs and the artists and the creators. But I knew, go to the lawyers because they see and hear everything. So basically, off camera, talking to a lot of lawyers and executives and even a couple CEOs who would not say this on camera, here's all you got to know about the He-Man of it all. Never again in the history of the toy business did what Mattel did with She-Ra happen.
See, that's interesting because I know they've made a botched attempts to revive the He-Man franchise several times, but never the way that it was during its heyday. I know I think Sony is going to try again next year, so we'll see. Maybe He-Man will have a resurrection, but I don't think we're going to be seeing She-Ra show up.
I predict you will see She-Ra. I am not a huge He-Man fan. Full disclosure, I bought my first He-Man figure less than a year ago, but now I have a giant shelf full of He-Man. So I love He-Man now. But I would argue She-Ra has a more coherent and better plot and characters. He-Man, and I feel like we addressed this in the episode, He-Man is really crazy. I mean, it is an absolute throw everything against the wall and anything that doesn't stick, which I think was like 3%, use. So 97%, you got suction cups, put them on. You got stinky stuff to put in the plastic goo, put it in. So it was just really kind of weird. But the main thing about He-Man as to why it worked, and I also think largely why it eventually failed, was the whole thing that we mentioned in the episode that it was, you know, some five-year-old kid in a test group said, I want power. I want power. I had no power. And brilliantly, the head of Mattel was like, that's it. Find a character that says, I have the power. I don't care who, what, where, why. Just have them say that. And that's what it led to. And that's why I think it was a hit. And I feel like that premise was very workable to little kids in the 80s. But now, like, I have three kids. My oldest is 4 years old. And, you know, I go to school with her sometimes, and I'm there for the books they read. You know, these books are very different.
Yeah.
Books that I was being read to when I was 4 years old. You know, my daughter, the last time I went to school with her, was being read a book. And I think this is wonderful. I think this is the greatest thing in the world. But the book she was being read by the teacher was about a little girl whose younger brother started wearing nail polish. And now she was all upset that her younger brother was wearing nail polish. And the moral of the story at the end of the book is, it's okay if a little boy wants to wear nail polish. So needless to say, 32 years ago, when I was 10 years old, not only was that book not have been written yet by a long shot, sort of the opposite of that book might have been written.
I was going to say, have you ever taken account of all the stuff that you loved as a kid would be considered offensive and banned now? And absolutely. You're like, and you kind of question if there's anything wrong with you. Like, I love this stuff, and I don't know if I'm allowed to love it anymore.
I mean, believe me, that's a whole other podcast. But that being said, I think to have a character in 1984 saying, I have the power, would resonate much more than a character saying it in 2018. Male or female, by the way. But notice, She-Ra didn't say that.
No. You know, you're right. She-Ra was a more orderly show. I think probably because when She-Ra came around, by that time, He-Man was an established brand. I think maybe they took a little more care into how they wanted to sort of, you know, like, to take another toy line, you had My Buddy, and then My Buddy led to Kid Sister, you know, and you had sort of the, you know, the Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse versions of everything. But I'll be honest with you, I've talked to a lot of He-Man aficionados. They liked She-Ra. They had no problem. I just think the target audience didn't care for it. Maybe that was it. Do you remember when the movie Ghostbusters came out a couple of years ago? And there was all this, again, because everything on the internet's a controversy, but how men supposedly didn't want to see it because women can't be Ghostbusters.
Here's the thing with Ghostbusters. I get very animated about this. I'll tell you what was wrong with the new Ghostbusters. Easy. And this has been true in the history of film. It had a bad trailer. If they had showed within reason the opening scene of that film, or a slightly later scene, the scene where the two leads meet, that film would have done another $100 million. That movie did badly because it had a bad trailer. If that movie had had a good trailer, that movie would have done better. That is a fantastic film that I had no desire to see because the trailer sucked. And then a friend of mine saw it. She told me to see it, and I trusted her opinion, and I loved it. By the way, I'll tell you the opposite of that. Social Network. I had no desire to see Social Network. Then the trailer came out with the redo of Creep, and I'm like, I got to see this movie. And it was a great movie. So I don't subscribe to the whole sexism thing with Ghostbusters. It was a bad trailer, and anything can be destroyed by a bad trailer.
That's exactly right. And it's not the sexism, it's the idea of the sexism. And next thing you know, we're talking about something that has nothing to do with the movie or the toys. And so that's why I'm not comfortable in saying I'm of the opinion that She-Ra didn't destroy He-Man. I just thought He-Man became unbelievably bad. Like, the toys were terrible by the end of it. They were horrible. No one wanted a toy that smelled like a skunk or squirted at you, which, by the way, became a meme recently, which is kind of funny.
I bought my first He-Man less than a year ago. First He-Man I bought, skunk. First
what,
one.
What kid didn't want that? So so let's talk about season two. I'm going to call it season two now because you said it's official.
Thanks.
So,
thanks. I appreciate
that. So real quick, I don't want to give anything away because there's a lot of cool stuff in here. But just finished watching the Hello Kitty episode this morning with my producer, and we had a lot of fun with it.
And one
of the things I wanted to say, I talk about, is you get to meet all the interesting people that create the toys. And the one that stuck out to me, I want to talk about Hello Kitty first. So I fell in love with Shintaro Papasugi, and I love this guy, and now he's my new hero. And because he reminds me of that old school, you know, Japanese salaryman who's just lovable. Like he's like I'll talk about it in a second, but like the ex-president of Nintendo, you know, Satoru Iwata, just bananas, literally bananas.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to Nintendo in a minute because I have a question for you. But so you have Shintaro Papasugi, but then another person jumped on the screen that I have to mention. I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm not going to be offensive. But then you have Yuko Yamaguchi, who's the current creator. She's a living. You could do a documentary on her.
Yep.
She's a living embodiment of a toy.
Yes.
And she's interesting. So my question is, besides Yuko Yamaguchi, were there any other, you know, colorful characters that jumped out at you while making the series?
The series or Hello Kitty?
Oh, we could talk all day about Hello Kitty. Because I remember a lot of the people you interviewed, a lot of the people that were instrumental in some toys, like you mentioned, the Mego, a lot of them came out as felons. Or a lot of them went to jail.
They ended up felons. And not a lot. Not a lot. Just a few. You know, it's a great question, man. I haven't been asked this before. Here's the thing that's really interesting. There were a lot of characters, and then we met a lot of people. And the best example of this, let me finish what I was saying before I interrupt myself. There were a lot of characters. And then there were a lot of people who it was just kind of like, I did my job, I cashed my check, I went home. And to this day, are very surprised that something they did to pay bills is still being talked about 30, 40, sometimes with Star Trek and Barbie, almost 50 years later. But I don't want to do spoiler alerts, but We interviewed somebody, I won't say who, and it's in the episode. We interviewed somebody who took a 3-hour train ride from his house to our set in Manhattan. And in his hands, he had, without a bag, folder, envelope, anything, in his hands was probably about 30 yellow legal pad pieces of paper that he was holding. And, you know, he showed up, whatever, you know, talking, whatever, blah, blah, blah. By the way, hot June day, you know, sweaty hands, whatever. He sits down to do the interview. He's holding the papers in his hands. And for whatever reason, none of us asked, what are you holding? And about an hour into the interview, I asked him something and he was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, I have here in my hands the original character breakdown of so-and-so. And so, and I'm like, dude, each one of those would probably sell for $25 to $250,000. Like, you might have $1 million to $2 million worth of paper in your hands right now that by the time you go home, you will have spent 6 hours in a train with no folder, no envelope, let alone a briefcase, let alone an armed guard. And we saw that quite a bit. Like, just people who had priceless relics of the things that created so many of our childhoods just kind of get it, but not really get it. And it was just a really interesting thing to see. They were just so humble, just kind of like, yeah, I did my job in 1984 and I kept doing my job. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then you'd have people like, you know, Marty at Mego who, you know, that guy reading from a phone book would be charismatic.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, my favorite part with him is when they gave him that obnoxious toy and he had to be shown how to use it, the toy that screeches at you. That's so funny. See, that's his punishment. That's his punishment. He has to play with that thing. So what you describe, I got to think a little story. You know, something like the Popzara website, we deal with movies and games and everything. And every once in a while, I hate to use the I word, the intersectionality of everything. But sorry, it's like, you know, you go to college, you got to learn these words. So, you know, you get things like, I want to go back to Transformers for a second, because a lot of this is like a nexus of our generation and how that sort of, you know, when you have like the live action movies that came out 10 years ago and they became this huge phenomenon. And I remember reading about it. I don't know if you heard this story, that there was talk about who's going to be Optimus Prime. And they wanted George Clooney. They wanted all this. And Michael Bay and the producer, and I think it was one of the stars, I forget his name, they said, no, get Peter Cullen, the original, you know, the original guy who basically took the job as a paycheck. He didn't think anything of it. He did voiceovers for everything. They got him back. The movies made billions of, you know, whether you think the movies are crap or not, they made a lot of money for a lot of people. And I get into this conversation with people who are film students all the time, and they talk about how terrible the Transformers movies are, how if you like them, there must be something wrong with you and how they're terrible. And I remember hearing this conversation between a fan, a really passionate fan, and a film fan. They said they shouldn't make these movies. And they talk about the most famous, most respected movie of all time, Citizen Kane by Orson Welles. And they said, you know, the last movie Orson Welles did before he died was Transformers. And they say, oh, really? They didn't know this. They don't know this. And they don't realize by the time Transformers came out in 1986, he was not only washed up, he was a caricature of washed up. He was, you know, he's become immortalized through, you know, voice actors like Maurice LaMarche, who make fun of his outtakes, you know, frozen peas. And he died during the development of it. But I would gather, you look at these Transformers conventions, more people have seen, or excuse me, listened to Orson Welles in Transformers than have ever watched or listened to him in Citizen Kane. And the reason we're talking about Orson Welles isn't because of Citizen Kane and Rosebud. It's because he was Unicron. He was a giant planet. That's vital. That still inspires people. And I remember watching some of the newer Transformers movies until they became, you know, crap. They would bring back people who at one point dismissed their participation, like Leonard Nimoy. He dismissed his participation, but he came back for another paycheck. It kept their careers vital in a way. Like, same with Star Trek. You know, remember, Leonard Nimoy would dismiss, oh, I'm not part of Star Trek. I'm not Spock. Oh, wait, I am Spock because paycheck's coming in. Yeah, no one remembers you from that other thing you did. But that's the feeling I get when I watch The Toys That Made Us. I get the feeling that you and your team are not making fun of these people, even people who could be made fun of. Like the woman I mentioned a minute ago, who are charismatic on the screen, but you're not. And that comes through on every episode that you, whether it's Barbie or Transformers or whatever, your team cares about these toys. And you care, more importantly, you care about the people who care about them. Was that conscious besides just the reverence?
It was extremely conscious for two reasons, really. Number one, I'm one of these people. So it would be very strange, and I would need, you know, 1,000,000,000,000 hours of therapy if I'm making fun of people that I consider myself one of them. So that's the first thing. And I revere these people. So they all have careers I wish I had had. They all did things that changed my life. So I created the show. I oversaw every single thing that came out of it. It'd be very strange to make fun of something that I revere. And, you know, it's the reason the show is called what the show is called. The toys made me. And then second of all, while we were making the show, people kept telling us almost daily through Facebook and Instagram, don't make fun of us. Don't make fun of us. And it was like, well, we're not going to make fun of you. We weren't planning on it. But rest assured, we're not going to make fun of you. But I'd love to go back and just address something you'd said a minute or two ago about the new Transformers movies, which is as I said earlier, you know, truly, I think the greatest person I met in my life was my grandfather, my mother's father. World War II survivor. I mean, just unbelievable. Became a doctor. The cliched immigrant story, came here with nothing and ended up running a hospital before he died. Like, just great man. And I'll never forget, one day we were at a restaurant and we were waiting for the table. And I went over to the bar because they were playing the Phil Collins video for I Can't Dance. And I loved that song and I loved that video. What a great video. And I'm sitting there standing at the bar, I don't know, I'm 12, 13 years old or something, watching the video. And I'll never forget, my grandfather, Austrian guy, thick accent like Arnold Schwarzenegger, comes up to me. He watches what I'm watching and he looks at me and goes, what is this noise? Like, he was really irritated that I liked it. And like I said, he's the greatest person I've ever met. And it just really made an impact on me. Like, at some point, the guy who's smart enough to get out of Austria before the Nazis show up, the guy who's brave enough to join the U.S. Army when he can barely speak English and go back and fight the Nazis and then come back here and become a doctor and raise a family, he might not be the best judge of music when he's pushing 80. So I never forgot that. And listen, I'm not a big fan of the new Transformer movies, but the fact that a five-year-old kid, the fact that my three-year-old son can see Bumblebee, say Bumblebee. That's what matters. And I would rather there be movies I don't like, but my son still cares at 3 years old, than the fact that I love every single Transformers movie that was ever made. The key thing is that they keep making them, and then at some point, I bet you they make one that I love, you know? So the last two Star Trek Next Generation movies were awful. But then, in my opinion, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek movie is one of my favorites that was ever made. And then the next two J.J. movies were horrible. And God willing, the new two that are being made are going to be good again. So I think the main thing is, as long as a franchise is alive, there's a chance they're going to hit the bullseye again.
You know, it's funny. Not every franchise from the old days can be revived. You know, they've you know, just look at movies like John Carter or The Lone Ranger. Like, you almost have to wonder why certain things exist and they're vital. Like, Sherlock Holmes gets reinvented every 5 or 6 years and it's always successful. Everything they do is successful. Even crappy Sherlock Holmes, like Sherlock Holmes in the 21st century, you know, it's crazy. It's crap, but people still liked it. And as far as the things like Transformers go, I think, you know, we may be in a lull where it's sort of died out for now or whatever, but if it's good enough, it will be back. And yes, and maybe it'll be better. You know, same with every toy lineup. And so before we head out, I just had a quick diversion for you. I want to ask you a quick question. So I want to talk about toys real quick. So we use the word toy, but can we use the word toy interchangeably with action figure or collectible figure? And I bring this up because a friend of mine, we're talking just today about people like Todd McFarlane, who, you know, made their second careers making these gorgeous sculpted things that look like they should belong in a museum, but instead you buy it at Toys R Us, which, by the way, Toys R Us RIP. So just had to say that. And so what do you think about are we quibbling about definitions, or does it matter anymore?
I don't think we're quibbling, but I would also say it doesn't matter.
Well, I bring it up because in the G.I. Joe one, in G.I. Joe episode, there was that whole discussion that boys won't want to play with G.I. Joe because they're considered dolls. Right.
But that's a very unique issue to G.I. Joe, because G.I. Joe was the toy or the thing or the collectible that had to make the argument to parents and kids that boys would play with what had previously been labeled a doll. But once G.I. Joe accomplished that and succeeded, every single other action figure, toy, whatever that came could exist without having to make that argument because G.I. Joe had done it. But again, back to your question, listen, all that matters, again, from my point of view, is that Mattel and Hasbro and McFarlane and NECA and everybody stays in business and keeps making more and more toys. Some will fail, some will succeed, but I think it is not a coincidence that a staggering percentage of, you know, the United States, and I know everybody, you know, is bagging on the USA lately, but it's undeniable that the United States, if you just look at patents, if you just break down every country in the world, what country issues more patents per year than every other country? You know, over the last 100 years, who has invented the internet? Who has invented, blah, and I know France now claims that, but you know what I'm saying? I don't think it's a coincidence that the United States consumes more toys than almost the entire rest of the world combined. And we're also the company, we're also the country that issues more patents than any other country. I don't think that's a coincidence. And by the way, the second biggest consumer of toys on planet Earth is Japan.
Yes,
and
I was going to say.
The country issues the second most amount of patents per year for at least 30, 40 years, Japan. So just going back to what I was saying, I think all that matters is these companies stay in business and keep issuing and making new toys and growing the hits, moving on from their losses, and that our kids have stuff to play with. I really think that's the main thing that we got to focus on. And if you call something a collectible that I call a doll, who cares as long as both of us are buying it and putting it on a shelf?
Thank you for bringing up Japan, because my final big question has to do with the future of toys. So this is a big one. I mentioned Toys R Us, RIP. Although Babies R Us is still around. I don't know the fairness of that. But when we were kids, we could go to Toys R Us and toys were cool. Toys were it. And then video games started coming in. I got to bring up the video game. You know, we could talk about Atari being this, but we got to really focus on Nintendo. And I bring up Nintendo specifically because when people talk about Nintendo as a company, we talk about Japan. There's a lot of similarities between the relationship between America and Japan when it comes to video games and Nintendo. The same way in the Hello Kitty episode, you had Sanrio. You know, Sanrio was doing Peanuts licensing, and they decided they used that knowledge to make their own. But from the 1980s, you could find Nintendo systems at Toys R Us. You could find them in the toy aisle. They were always considered toys. But more importantly to that, apart from PlayStations and Xboxes and Ataris, there's always been a component to Nintendo that's been physical. The first Nintendo shipped with Rob the Robot, a robot buddy for those lonely people who couldn't have a real friend to push buttons. Still today. But then you have, up till recently, just in the last month or so, Nintendo released a thing called Labo, which is cardboard. You can make your own toys. Literally make your own toys out of cardboard.
The most expensive cardboard in the history of
They found a way to do it. And, you know, this is an industry, Brian, where everybody's talking about VR and virtual. And they want to make it more and more fake by making it immersive. Whereas Nintendo says, you know what? The future is cardboard. Or, you know, they have another accessory called the Amiibos, which are literally toys that you play with your Nintendo systems. And they do very well. They do extremely well with these things. So my question to you is, do you see some sort of convergence between the digital and the physical as a way forward? Or do you think they're mutually exclusive?
I think that there will be I think right now the overlap is about 3-5% between digital and physical. I think over the next 25 years, that will grow to at the most 20%. I think at the least 80% of toys will be, some will be physical and not digital, some will be digital and not physical. But I think the overlap will grow.
So you think they could survive, they can continue to survive in some sort of symbiotic relationship, whereas because, you know, it's really funny. I saw this report a couple of months ago where kids raised on iPads who've never used crayons, who've never used pencils, who've never used pencils. They don't have the finger strength. They don't have the dexterity to write anymore. And I got to say, that sounds crazy to me.
I have a three-year-old and a four-year-old. Let me assure you, you heard it here first. Their fingers are fine. Crayons and pencils, everything.
Exactly. We need our fingers. The kids need fingers. But, you know, otherwise we're going to be in some Wall-E universe where people are so, you know, where there's bone separation and people are just riding around on gliders, you know, sucking up big gulps, which still might happen. Here's the question. I was talking to my producer today, and we came up with a little list, and I'm just going to run by you because it's nostalgia. And these are – we wanted to sort of recommend, because everyone's going to do this, recommend some ideas. So if this series continues, you can steal these ideas, and we'll be happy. As long as you do as good a job, we'll be so happy. And if you don't, letters. Me letters. So I'm just going to go down basic stuff. So here's a list.
Do you want me to comment on these, or just, what do you want me to do?
I want to be – I mean, you can comment. These are just throwing these out there because it was so much fun to, like, spitball. You know, when you get on YouTube and you start watching classic 80s commercials.
Let's go. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Peanuts.
Possible but unlikely.
All right. Voltron.
Combined with something like Robotech and maybe other things.
That was on the list. We got Macross, Gundam, and Robotech, so we'll put that with Voltron. Okay. Cabbage Patch Kids?
Definitely.
Good. Hot Wheels?
Definitely.
Good. Teddy Ruxpin.
Well, I would do an episode about Worlds of Wonder because that company makes Mego look like the most boring company. They went crazy. They made so much money so quickly. They literally had the cliche thing where they didn't know what to do with the money. I mean, they were piling cash in offices and like banks in the middle of like, I think, North Carolina. The entire 180-year-old bank that's entire deposits were like 19 million. Worlds of Wonder was putting like 100 million in to the bank. So if we are able to do like a fifth, sixth season, I would love to do an episode about Worlds of Wonder.
That would be great. This one, we put down Smurfs, but we could astrophy that and say anything with Hanna-Barbera. So
I think Smurfs is very possible.
Okay. Now, the next one, please. Ghostbusters.
It's a weird one, man, because it's a tiny audience that's very diehard into it. That's what's working against it. But what's working for it is an amazing story. Like, equal, if not more interesting than He-Man because of the two competing toy lines and all the politics surrounded the legalese between the cartoon. You know, there was a Ghostbusters cartoon not connected to the movie.
Oh, so, you mean the one with the monkey, the gorilla?
Yeah.
We don't talk about that one too much.
I'll tell you this, and this is the first time I've said this publicly. There is something going on with our series that I cannot discuss at this moment that is very exciting. That has already started working and happening that will tie into this topic.
Okay, I will leave it at that. So I got a few more. We got to get going. Thundercats and or Silverhawks.
If we did Thundercats, I think Thundercats is one of these similar to Mask toys where they made a huge impression because they had cartoons and there were only three networks in the 80s. So they made a huge impression, but they, and I don't mean to get people upset, but they were kind of failures. There's a reason why they were only for sale for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. So it might be a combined episode, but there's no way Thundercats could get his own episode, nor could Mask.
So that's why
Silverhawks.
That's why we put a bunch of combiners, because we had to really stretch it here. So the last couple ones, this one's a big combiner. This one's a whole bunch of slashes. Care Bears, Rainbow Bright, Strawberry Shortcake, and or My Little Pony.
My Little Pony will definitely get its own episode by itself. An episode we will call The Greeting Card Toys, which, again, has not been greenlit. But a lot of people don't know this, but Strawberry Shortcake and Care Bears started off as greeting cards and then became toys. So we would do an episode like that. And that would be how we did it.
Cool. I knew there was a name for what that was, sort of like Pirates of the Caribbean was a ride before it was a movie. Didn't know there was a name, the exact name. So last two ones.
We coined that. It's nothing official.
Make a wiki page. That way you can sue. But so I don't know what category this would be in. We call them the ironic toys. those are toys based off weird properties like Freddy Krueger. Arlie Ermey had his own one, Gandhi in action figure, which have become very popular at like Hot Topic. I don't know how much they sell. They're way too expensive, but we call them ironic toys. I can't imagine. I don't know how you could do that.
There are two episodes I am dying to do that at the moment we're not scheduled to do. One of them is sort of what you just said, except I call it the toys that should have not been made. And the epitome and the inspiration for this idea is LGN's Dune line. And anything connected to Dune of a commercial product's nature. But also, you know, what a lot of people, basically the episode could also be called Toys That Were Inspired by the Success of Star Wars. You know, as soon as Star Wars hit, all these movies got made, like Black Hole, Dune. The movies shouldn't have been made. The toys shouldn't have been made. So that's one episode. And then the other episode I'm dying to do that has not been greenlit is an episode all about fast food toys, like McDonald's.
Oh, yes.
Dying to do that.
They had Cooking with Alf, I remember that. Came with these little paper records. Yeah, records, actual records that would sing. The 80s were crazy, man. So last two ones, these are the big ones. Comics. And by that, we just grouped them together. Marvel, DC, Image, leads into Todd McFarlane and all that. I don't know how that would happen, but I just know every comic book ever made has a toy somewhere out there.
Yes, we very likely, if given the chance, would do a superheroes.
Nice.
I'm thinking of breaking it up, and this is my own bias, but I think I'd break it up. One episode would be just about Batman, and then another episode would be about essentially everything but Batman.
Yeah, that's actually pretty smart. And the final one is, this one really struck out, board games.
Yes.
I don't know if you qualify them as toys too, but board games are very, Monopoly, you know, everything.
Very high on my list is to do an episode about Monopoly in particular, but a couple others as well. But Monopoly, if you don't know anything about the history of Monopoly, that should be the next thing you Wikipedia. That is an unbelievable story.
Still going on too, isn't it? They're switching out pieces. They're doing everything.
Absolutely. They're basically, Hasbro believes every single American, but after hitting a certain age and before another, like after they hit 16 and before they hit 35, I'm making up the numbers, but it's something like that, will buy Monopoly. They all will. Every American will.
Or they will have Monopoly forced upon them at Christmases and Hanukkahs.
Calculate if in 2018 there were 27 million births, that means they will sell 27 million Monopolies in, you know, 2031 or something.
I want a Monopoly board set that just says Google Monopoly. I don't think we're going to get. It's funny, but it's sort of sad. And like, tell you what, I'm not here to spitball ideas with you because, frankly, I love the show. And let's wrap things up because you've been listening to the Popstar podcast. We've been talking toys. We've been talking comedy. We've been talking a lot of Transformers and way too much Barbie and Hello Kitty with none other than Brian Wolk-Weiss, the creator of the hit Netflix documentary series, The Toys That Made Us. Now I can say, Brian, the actual season two comes out next Friday, May 25th. You're going to be able to see all sorts of stories about, let me get this, Lego, Transformers, Hello Kitty, Star Trek. Go watch season one. It's on Netflix now. You know you got it. Netflix and chill. And with that, Brian, thank you very much for showing up on the Popstar Podcast.
Much. This was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. And I'll make sure everything goes out. And we'll see you guys on the next level. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now we know.
And knowing's half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
You've been listening to the Popzara podcast. For more quality original content, check out popzara.com for the latest reviews and previews in gaming, movies, tech, and more.